Galway family Vera Quinlan and Peter Owens, along with their children Lillian 12 and Rory 10, set sail from Kinvara in June last year on board their yacht Danu for the trip of a lifetime. They went south to the Canaries and Cape Verde Islands before crossing the Atlantic. They've spent the last couple of weeks on an idyllic Caribbean island in COVID lockdown on their boat, but they're setting sail for Ireland tomorrow morning. I spoke to Vera by phone from their boat in Antigua about the trip and their journey home.
We're coming home tomorrow. Absolutely. Now, it's going to be a bit of a long journey home. It's almost 4,000 nautical miles. We hope to stop in the Azores on the way home. It'll be myself, Peter, and the two kids, Lillian and Rory, on board. So it's a long enough journey. We're hoping for 18 to 20 days to the Azores. And then from the Azores then home, we're guessing another 12 to 14. So we're kind of looking at 32-ish days at sea.
The COVID-19 crisis has caused you a bit of a problem on the way back. You don't know whether or not you'd be able to land in the Azores.
We have assurance. We have made contact with the Azores, and they are letting us stop on a quarantine dock for 48 hours. So it's very likely that we'll do that. We'll more than likely need the fuel and the water and the rest, to be honest, because it's, you know, just the two of us doing the watches. So we're going to take them up on that offer. So that's great. That's what they're offering to all the yacht people coming back to Europe from the Caribbean.
What's the weather going to be like for you?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? But at the moment, I mean, we have been watching it now for the last 10 days intensely. What we're looking for is something, well, wind, obviously, south of east, just a little bit south of east. So we'll take the trades for north for 3 or 4 days. And that should be an easy enough run. You tend to hit a little bit of a high pressure, then you'll get a little bit of engineering, that's okay. But generally the idea then is you have low pressures kind of coming across the North Atlantic, and ideally you want to try and run with those low pressures. They'll have a little bit of wind.
It would be going with you when it's on the edge like that, from your position.
Well, we hope, but we will have a lot of headwind. We expect to have a lot of headwinds. Generally on that passage, you have to expect headwinds, but hopefully not too much tacking. But it certainly won't be running with it like we did on the southern crossing. We crossed from the Cape Verde to French Guiana on the southern crossing, and that was easy enough sailing with the wind on your back the whole time. And but we expect headwinds on the passage for sure.
You've been at sea for a long time. When did you leave home?
So we departed Ireland, Kinvara, Galway Bay, June 14th, 2019. So coming up to a year, we expect to be back home into Galway Bay July 1st. So it's going to be pretty much a year. Now, obviously, it has been shortened. We would have spent 4 to 6 weeks in the Azores on the way home. So, unfortunately, we're coming home a little bit early, but that's fine too.
Where have you been? It sounds like an extraordinary trip, and I'm sure most people listening are madly jealous.
Yeah, well, we started in Galway Bay, and we headed south. We headed to the Scilly Isles, and we hopped our way down the west coast of Europe. We went inland. We like to go inland a bit. We come from a mountaineering, climbing background, so we went up into the mountains and the Pecos. Met some friends, actually, from the Irish mountaineering contingency in the Pecos. And then we kept going south down to the Canaries and then on to Morocco. We actually left the boat in Rabat in Morocco and headed up into the Atlas Mountains for 3 weeks. We trekked across the Atlas Mountains and down into the Sahara and then back to Danu again in Rabat. And then we continued our journey again from Morocco out to Madeira, south to the Canaries, to the Cape Verde Islands off the northwest coast of Africa, and then across to French Guiana. And French Guiana was very adventurous and a little bit out there. But when we were planning this trip with the kids, they said, we kind of asked them, you know, where would you, is there anywhere you'd really kind of like to go? And they both shouted, the Amazon. And of course, I was like, okay, how can we make this happen? So okay, we decided on French Guiana, and we took a trip. We took Danu up the Moroni River into somewhere on the Moroni, and some tributaries off it. Not quite the Amazon, obviously, but tributaries of. And we made landfall on the east of the Loup. I don't know if you read a book called Papillon before, but
absolutely. I think most people have seen the movie.
Yes. So it was fascinating to go there.
This is where he ended up on the shoreline at some stage.
That's right, he did, and made several escape attempts from those islands to get back onto the mainland, and eventually he escaped. But yeah, so it was incredible to see that area, and we had a couple of educational projects along the way. One of which was to visit the European Space Station, and so we saw a rocket launch, and so the kids saw all of that, and that was all part of it, was bringing in the homeschooling, and making that a little bit easier, so I'm not sitting down with the kids. We did projects like that along the way.
French Guiana was kind of out there. What does that mean?
Okay, well, it was a little bit more challenging than the usual destinations. Most people will cross and they'll go to Barbados, and we've done a similar crossing before, and we would have made landfall in Barbados, and that's a much easier, I suppose, Caribbean environment to land yourself into. French Guiana is almost on the equator, so it's exceptionally hot. It's got huge amounts of rainfall, so it's hot and wet. And on a boat, you don't have air conditioning. And if you can't open the hatches, then it gets quite intolerable. So we really enjoyed it. But after 3 weeks, we were running to Bekwe in the Caribbean to dive off the boat.
Tell me something about the boat, Danu. Is she steel hull?
She is. She's a steel. She's sound vessel. We love her to bits. And she's taken exceptional care of us. She's not flashy. If you compare her with some of the yachts that are out here, she's quite basic. But she has everything you need. We don't have gizmos like water makers and electric toilets. And I mean, we've been on some vessels here that are just mind-boggling. But she has everything that you would want, and doesn't have air conditioning. Everyone is wondering, but she's a great ship for doing a passage like this, and within anyone's budget. To be honest, a lot of people ask about that. I mean, there are yachts out there that cost hundreds of thousands, but Danu isn't one of those.
When she's a steel boat, does she take much maintenance?
She does. She takes quite a bit of maintenance. Peter is a dab hand at that. We bought her in reasonably poor condition, although the hull was sound, and we took her back to Galway, and Peter replaced the engine, put a brand new engine in her. And so I suppose when you do all your own work, you get to know a vessel very well, and therefore the maintenance is easier and an awful lot cheaper because you can do it all yourself. But I mean, there's maintenance with any boat, whether they're fiberglass or any other material. You really have to keep on top of them. So yes is the answer. It's a lot of hard work.
You've come up now through the Caribbean. What islands did you take in?
So after French Guiana, we decided that we would leave there and head up to Bekwe for New Year. And that was a fantastic reach for 5 days. And we got into Bekwe on the 30th of December. They call it the Grenadines. That's where we made landfall. And then from there, we went north from Bekwe, then St. Vincent, St. Lucia, Martinique, and then Dominica, which was an incredible country. And we like to go inland and walk up volcanoes and incredible scenery and wildlife. The things that you would see on a normal walk through Dominica, just absolutely mind-blowing. And then from there, we kept going north to Guadeloupe. And we arrived in Guadeloupe March 14th. We were leaving, we were departing Guadeloupe March 14th to head to Montserrat. And I had a phone call from my sister in France saying, we've heard rumors about this COVID, and within days, all the borders started closing.
The borders started to close all around you?
Yeah, so the borders just started to close all around us. We were hoping to go to St. Patrick's Day Parade in Montserrat. And we very quickly realized that we needed to make a decision about where we were going to go. We had heard some stories already of the French islands. We're still in Guadeloupe, and we had 12 hours to leave, or to stay. So we decided to go. When we got to Antigua, we were one of the last boats that were allowed to enter, and we very quickly were told to choose an anchorage, put her anchor down, and you'll be staying there for quite some time.
Really?
So, again, it was big decision time. Where are we going to go? How are we going to entertain the kids? We're already hearing tales of people not being able to, not only not being able to leave their vessels, but not being able to even get into the water and swim or use a beach. So that's difficult in these conditions, especially when you have two children on board and, not to be able to kind of go out on a paddleboard and exercise, et cetera, et cetera. So we very quickly made a decision to go to Barbuda, which is just to the north of Antigua. It's 30 miles from Antigua, wrapped by a fantastic reef. So we knew we would be safe, and we knew maybe that Barbuda, it wouldn't be as strict. And the decision paid off. So we spent 5 weeks on Barbuda, which is essentially, it's not a deserted island. It does have a population, but it's a very small population. So we ran for there, put our anchor down, and that's where it stayed for 5 weeks.
You were surrounded by people in similar boats.
So 8 of us were in that anchorage in Barbuda. And it was, I have to say, one of the most incredible experiences of my life to date, and something that I'll never forget. I suppose the camaraderie between the vessels. We were met by officials, and that was fine. And they were very friendly and really good to us. They realized we had children on board. They turned a blind eye to some of the more stringent regulations that really made no sense. And they said, look, this is how we're going to do it here. Please don't visit our center, our town center, or go anywhere near the town. That was absolutely fine. Please feel free to use this area of our island, and which included the beach, obviously, and the reef. And please don't interact with fishermen, etc. After 2 weeks, they came to us again and said, do we need fruit? Do we need vegetables? And they set it down on the beach. And then they told us how much it would cost, and that was fine. And then on another rock, we put the money down in under a rock, and they came to collect the money, and we collected our fruit and veg. And that's how we survived those 5 weeks. And luckily, three boats out of the eight had very big water makers, so they made water for all the boats on anchor there. And we had an incredible time on this Robinson Crusoe Island. And we snorkeled every single day. I made an underwater video, and we saw incredible things: sharks, moray eels, turtles. And it was incredible because we would never have spent 5 weeks in that location. We would have moved on and on, and we wanted to get to the Bahamas.
It all sounds incredible. Maybe when you get back, you'll talk to us again.
I will indeed, absolutely, Fergal.
But you're leaving tomorrow morning.
So we're leaving on Saturday morning, and then off we go, and we'll be at sea for 5 weeks. We expect to be into Ireland maybe the 1st of July or thereabouts.
And that will that be into Kinvara?
That'll be into Kinvara, absolutely.
I'm sorry to tell you that just today I heard that Cruinniú na Mór has been cancelled.
I heard that too, yeah, that's unfortunate. But, maybe we'll be able to hold it later in the year or there's always next year, I guess.
Look, the best of luck to you on your journey back.
Thank you so much, Fergal.
And let's hope that Vera, Peter, Lillian and Rory have a great voyage back. You can actually follow their progress on the Ocean Cruising Club website. They're called Danu of Galway, and we'll put the link on our website. If you're hoping to get on the water yourself over the next couple of weeks, take a look at the Irish Sailing website. There they have full guidance on the Return to Sailing Part 1, which starts on Monday. You'll find all the details you need on sailing.ie/coronavirus. And on a different tack, on the Atlantic approach to Clew Bay stands an outcrop of bare rocks known locally as Bill's Rocks. But where did they get this unusual name? Joanna McNicholas has been out in a few heavy showers of rain to find out.
In the late 1700s, a Danish Navy frigate equipped with 36 guns and a large crew, and under the command of Captain Matthias de Bill, left Copenhagen for the West Indies. But after 1 month at sea, it arrived into Newport Harbour in County Mayo. Local historian there, Joe McDermott, recounts details from the official records.
Around 1991 or 92, I heard a lecture by Dr. John Bradley about Matthias de Bill, and that's where I first came into contact with the whole concept of the Bornholm and Newport. And I'd like to acknowledge Dr. Bradley's work and the research that he did in order to bring this story to light. I have made myself familiar with it as a result. The best way to start off with the Bornholm is to tell you that it sailed from Copenhagen on December the 14th, 1781. And it arrived in Newport on January the 17th, 1782. By August of 1782, it was ordered back to Copenhagen, having been refitted. And it's what happens in between is the great adventure story and the great tragedy of the Bjornholm. And incidentally, they had a few little incidents before they left Copenhagen. One of them was a cutter coming out to the ship capsized and 20 sailors were drowned. Another little incident that happened before they left was another ship that was sailing with them for a while bumped into them, but no damage was done. So there were a couple of little strange little occurrences before they got sailing. However, they headed off out and they were to go up above the Faroes and come down along the west coast of Scotland and Ireland and then to head out into the Atlantic for the Danish West Indies. Of course, they never made it. What happened at first was that some of the men started to get sick. Strangely, after a couple of days, literally a week, there were first illnesses. There were 30 or 40 men who were sick. By the 10th of January, there were 50 new men sick. And then began 6 days of even more brutal weather. They lost the mainsail, the foresail and the mizzen. They were whipped into shreds and the masts collapsed. The weather was so bad. And to quote from De Bill, "We were a wreck which we could never make navigable in this wild sea. The weather is incredibly bad for 4 or 5 weeks. Waves have washed over the whole ship." So you can imagine the conditions that they were in. Sick men, and some, by the way, of the crew were actually soldiers who were going out to the Danish colonies. So there were 270, if you like, call them sailors, but I'd say 50, 60 of those were probably soldiers. By the 17th of January, they were off Achill, and they were able to get a sighting. They didn't know it was Achill. They had no charts of the west coast as far as we can see, and they began to try and turn southwest. So they had been coming east, they'd been blown in eastwards, but now they tried to go southwest and they saw some rocks in the distance. And I believe that they're what we today call the Bill's Rocks. On the 18th of January, a boat came out to their ship and it carried 4 men. It was probably a curragh. 2 of the men spoke English and 2 spoke Irish, and they said, oh yes, that they would pilot them all the way in the bay to a place called the Newport. So after much haggling over how much this would cost, because De Bille was very careful with money, and these guys were, they were poor people, and they were looking for 25% of the boat of the frigate. But of course he said, no way, I couldn't just, you know, just couldn't do that. So eventually they worked out whatever they were going to get, and they headed off in the bay, and they began to take other kind of readings from other sites, and they began to mark their positions roughly where they believed they were on a rough chart. By the 20th, they were in at what we call Rabbit Island, just out from Malcolm Point here near Newport. And a navy, or maybe a revenue cutter, came out from Newport with officials on board, much to De Bille's relief. And he went ashore to talk to people in this town to see what help he could get for the sick people he had, etc. and so on. He had now over 70 people who were sick, and he describes their condition as mad, which is interesting. He says that they were mad, and I think that's important later on. De Bille himself becomes ill, and he's nursed by a man we know as Pat Gibbons, and he dies on the 17th of March, and he's buried. Now, this is interesting. We think that the sailors who died are buried somewhere along Malcolm Point in unmarked graves. De Bille himself, it was said, was buried in a local graveyard. But the man who looked after him, Pat Gibbons, was compensated by the Danish government, and he was compensated to the extent that he was able to build a new house right on the main street. And that's today is called De Bille House. It's the home of former Senator Frank Chambers. And that's where that house is today. De Bille, tragically, no grave that we know of marked. The Bjornholm left Ireland on the 15th of July and arrived in August under a captain of the name Raphael Tondar. The other thing that I've been thinking about, and John Bradley himself suggested this, that this was the beginning of food being tinned in lead tins. And he pondered the quality of the lead in the tins, and was there a leaching of the lead into the food, and could that have caused the illnesses? You know, if you read some of the things about lead poisoning, you'll find that the conditions that's described is very like the conditions of lead poisoning. De Bille himself lost his speech, his sight and his hearing within a day. You know, as the kind of person he was, he continued to use the ship's supplies, eat the ship's food. I don't know, maybe that was part of the reasoning for the health conditions, deterioration.
A few years after this incident, an outcrop of rocks near Achill Island was named after Captain De Bille. Dennis McCarthy from Achill tells us about Bill's Rocks.
It's about 9 or 10 miles out, easily accessible, and a brilliant fishing ground. Years and years and years ago, it was the fishing ground for the local people on the west and southwest coast of Achill Island. And many of them made the hazardous journey on a regular basis, in the springtime mostly, maybe in the back end also, but in the springtime to fish cod and ling. And that supplemented them during the winter months when times were lean and hard and food was very hard got. Even today, not as much as in previous years, fishermen still fish around the bills, but only for shellfish, lobster, crayfish and crab. We have a kind of a close relationship with the bills, my family especially, because it was a place where my great-grandfather used to fish every year, and he fished for cod and ling, and it kind of provided nourishment for them for the winter months. It is reported years ago, I presume in the First World War, that the British Navy used to use the Bill's Rock as a target practice from about 14, 15 miles out, because at that distance, the Bill's Rock silhouetted the shape of a boat or a battleship, and they practiced on it. Unfortunately, the poor man that told me this, he's now deceased, he told me that he often got shell casings on the rock itself. The Duige people claim the Bill's as part of their commonage. The Duoc people also claim it, but I think we're just that little bit nearer.
The hot summer of 2018 enabled the long-awaited filming of Bill's Rocks, and this can be viewed on YouTube.
Joanna McNicholas. a word about a charity effort being done by young Irish sailors in aid of the RNLI. Four young 29er sailors are doing a virtual cycle around Ireland in aid of the lifeboat. They're at about halfway, they've been helped by some Olympians, and they've finished next Tuesday. Their GoFundMe page is Virtual Round Ireland Cycling Challenge for the RNLI. Details are on our website.